the Lord bless you. May the Lord keep you. May the Lord's face shine on you.
It's time now for Faith in Action, the program that looks at how ordinary people incorporate their faith into their everyday lives. The program is underwritten by St. Vincent Health, providing the spirit of caring through 20 health ministries that serve 46 central Indiana counties, and by Marian University, offering Catholic and academic excellence in the Franciscan and liberal arts traditions.
May the Lord's peace be with you.
Welcome to Faith in Action. I'm Kent Blanford, sitting in today for Jim Ganley, and alongside me, MJ Crowder. MJ, who are our guests today?
Well, today, our feature is Spotlight on Underwriters, and we have, basically, the Price Vision Group with us today. We have Marianne Price. She's the Executive Director of the Cornea Research Foundation of America, and we have Dr. Francis Price. He is, of course, an internationally recognized ophthalmologist, surgeon, named as one of the top physicians in the country for corneal disease and transplantation by the best doctors in America. I kind of like that. That's right up there at the top. If the best doctors name you that, right?
Right.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a quick one on the way in here. I was able to answer this, but I bet you some of our listeners won't. The difference between an optometrist and an ophthalmologist.
We have both in our practice. And optometrists traditionally do contact lenses and glasses, and now they do the medical aspects of the eye. And they go to optometry school after college. Ophthalmologists, after college, go to medical school. We do an internship, and then we do at least 3 years of a residency program where we just study eye diseases and eye surgery. And then many of us spend 1 to 2 years after that with additional training, and I did transplant work at Tulane University.
At Tulane. Okay, so let's go back to the beginning, way, way back.
Well, I started at St. Mark's Grade School.
Oh, okay.
That's a good start.
Okay, and that's on the south side. Okay, south side.
And then I went to Brebeuf on the other side of town.
Okay, right.
Then went to Notre Dame. That's where I met Marianne.
Okay.
And then went to Indiana University Medical School, Methodist Hospital when that was hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to Indiana again for a residency for 3 years, and then to Tulane for a year.
Okay, so you had to be early 30s before, or maybe even mid-30s before
I had just started practice, and I was driving to community hospital one day when a news report came on that Jimmy Connors was retiring because he was too old to play tennis. He was 32. And that's how old I was, and I was just starting.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
So it takes a long time to be an ophthalmologist because really anything in medicine is a pretty long time commitment.
Sure.
And I think there's a lot to learn, but also you have to, in a way, you have to be old enough to handle the issues that happen, just mature enough to deal with, you know, problems people have. And it's probably the same way for priests, too. You don't want people starting that when they're 18 years old. You need some life experience. You know, we used to do people asleep, but with general anesthesia, people can die. And especially elderly people, but even young people do sometimes. And so it's actually so much safer and so much better to be awake. So
really?
I was doing cataract surgery today, and I always tell my patients, you're going to get a nice light show. And we don't charge extra for that part. But one of my patients today said, you know what, you could charge extra for this. This was the best light show I've ever seen.
Seriously? Yeah. Seriously. Okay.
And so it's so much safer. And we've helped pioneer some new transplant techniques where we transplant just a single cell layer. It's about 15 microns, 20 microns thick. And we're able to do that with topical anesthesia, too. The patients get something for those through an IV as well, but they're awake. And it's just so much safer for a variety of reasons, you know, anything from glaucoma to high pressure in the eye afterwards, to not having the risk of the injections of needles by your, basically the nerve going to your eye.
Yeah, that's
so
pretty incredible.
It's actually, even though people say they don't want that, they really do, because it's so much better.
Okay, so the tugging doesn't bother people so much, I guess.
Not usually. You know, okay. We walk people through it, and I think when you go over the safety factor, most people get it. It's just so much better, and we really, you know, live at a great time. I know Marianne always says she, you know, gets kind of she's surprised when people say there were the good old days. There's no time really better than now for technology and what we can do to restore vision and do a lot of things in medicine or even just the way we live with all the conveniences we have.
Well, so let me ask you a question. Of course, our listeners will, I think you are probably, Price Vision Group is probably the most recognized vision group in Indianapolis. I don't think there's any question about that. When you started way back when, was your vision, excuse the pun, was what it is today anywhere close to what you imagined back in your days at Notre Dame or even IU Med School?
No, I'd always thought I'd want to do family practice.
Okay.
But I took a rotation in ophthalmology, and eyes are really beautiful to look at. We look at them under the microscope, and I thought it'd be easy. They're so small. But it turns out they're very complex. More information comes into our brain from our eyes than any of the other senses. So it's really our most important contact. And I think that what we've done is evolved. What we try to do is find problems and solve them. And if you do that, like we do transplants, we do over 1% of all the transplants in the country. But we're always trying to find ways to not have to do transplants. And I don't worry about being out of work because we'll find something else. And we got into LASIK. I was one of the first surgeons in the country, really in the world, to do LASIK. We've been doing it for 20 years. I got into that because I knew that it wasn't normal to have to wear glasses or contacts all the time. People aren't happy. They want to be normal like they should be without that.
Sure.
And at that time, a lot of the doctors were against it. They said, it's not normal to do that. You know, these are normal eyes. I'm like, no, they're not normal eyes. And so we keep trying to find problems that we can fix to make life better for people.
Well, that was kind of revolutionary, actually. I think contact lenses back in the day, putting those in my eye, that was a little bit foreign. It was like, oh, I don't want to put something in my eye. So I did glasses forever before I finally did hard. And then what a dream for soft. And now I don't do it at all because my eyes have gotten better over the years. Marianne, we haven't chatted much with you. You actually are the director of the Cornea Research Foundation. And I did a little bit of reading on that. The evolution, if you will. Tell us a little bit about the evolution of that, because that is incredibly dramatic.
Yes. Well, Dr. Price started the Cornea Research Foundation shortly after he went into practice because he wasn't satisfied with the current way of doing cornea transplants and felt that there definitely could be improvement, but we needed to track the outcomes and see what made things better, what made people heal faster, what helped people see better. And so over the years, we've tracked the outcomes of over 8,000 cornea transplants, and we've really helped to revolutionize the way that cornea transplants are done, both the medications that are used with transplants and the actual surgical procedures, because we've actually documented what the outcomes are and what makes things better.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about a transplant, and I imagine that the cornea is the very front of your eye. You have to slice some off and put something back on, right? Is there a stitch involved?
Not with LASIK. And actually, even with cataract surgery now, there's typically not a stitch.
Okay.
But in some surgeries, we do use stitches.
Okay. So there's not a lot of margin for error here, though. I mean, when you're talking about the evolution of corneal transplants, there had to, of course, be guinea pigs, I imagine, whether they wanted to be or not.
Well, the first transplant was done that was successful was on a human was done in 1905 in Austria. And at that time, they had no sutures, they had no antibiotics, they had no anti-rejection drops. It's amazing that worked. And so really, they started being done with any kind of numbers in the 1950s and 60s.
Relatively new.
Right.
Okay.
And then we've been really fortunate to help pioneer this brand new surgery where we just do single cell layers. And that's totally changed transplant surgery. We've reduced the rejection rate by 20 times. We've been able to get people a surgery where they can get their vision back in 2 to 5 days instead of a year or two.
LASIK, that really is in the last generation, has really become popular in the last, 20.
Well, it's only been done for 20 years.
Okay, 20 years.
We did some things before that that were quite a bit more involved, but not as precise. And so it's really refined. It's a pretty nice surgery.
I have a dear friend who's blind. He was in an automobile accident at 19 years old, and he had some, I think there was his retinal detachment of some sort. He's now 50 years old. Are there advancements being made in the assistance or help of blind people? For instance, like that, when there is a break, a complete rupture, it seems to me a tragedy. He's gone 30 years without any sight because of an automobile accident 30 years ago.
Well, developmentally, the retina in the back of the eye and the optic nerve, the nerve that goes to the eye, are part of the brain. And so when those are damaged or injured, there's no way to get them to regenerate with the technology we have now.
Yeah, but, the wonderful thing about science is it's always changing. Daily there's good news coming out and good research. Marianne, I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about the foundation. I read something in the IBJ, which I chuckled, because you said that you are tickled when people find out that Indiana actually hosts the best and finest here. And I chuckled because, of course, we think Indianapolis is, we've got an international airport, we've got all the conveniences of modern living, and yet to have Dr. Price here, not in L.A. or New York or Chicago, how wonderfully blessed we are. But tell us a little bit about the foundation.
Well, we have about half of our patients who come for cornea transplants come from outside the state of Indiana. So we're actually a world-renowned transplant center here. But it is pretty funny because especially when we get somebody from New York or sometimes from the West Coast, they'll just be so surprised that to find out that the leading transplant surgeon in the world is located in a flyby state, Indiana.
A flyover state, if you
will.
Yeah. Now, you do a lot of training.
We do.
Okay.
So that's where we've had a really big impact. A lot of people are not able to travel here to Indiana to have a transplant, but we've really been able to change the way transplants are done around the world by hosting surgical training courses. We've had doctors come from over 28 countries. But hundreds of doctors come here to Indiana, but of course some doctors can't travel here. So we usually travel to a couple of international meetings each year to give training and talks to surgeons right in their own country so that they can learn right where they are. And of course we've posted a lot of surgical videos on YouTube. We've published textbooks. We've given lots of courses and papers.
We're almost out of time. This always happens. It goes so very quickly. Our guest today, Spotlight on Underwriter, Dr. Francis Price, Price Vision Group, and Marianne Price, his beautiful wife. This is one of those times when I wish we were on TV instead of radio because you are both such a handsome couple. Marianne, beautiful. Marianne's the Executive Director of the Cornea Research Foundation of America. Okay, so in the less than a minute we have left, Dr. Price, what would you like to toss out there? I was going to ask you, I've got a great question. I had an argument with my 20-year-old daughter. I was talking about sunglasses and UV rays and blah, blah, blah. And she said, Mom, actually, not wearing sunglasses is better for your eyes. Tell me.
No, actually, for kids it may not be a problem, but once you get to middle age, however you want to define that, the natural lens in your eye doesn't process the rays that are coming in so well, and you'll cause earlier cataract development.
Thank you.
And then once you've had cataract surgery or the lenses in your eyes replaced, you should really wear sunglasses all the time in the bright sun.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like everything else. It's good in moderation, but don't overdo it.
Okay, I love it. God bless you. Thank you so much for being our guest today, and may the Lord's peace be with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Joe Wrights of the Indianapolis Colts. Last year I attended the Catholic Radio golf outing and had a great time. I can't make this year's event, but it promises to be better than ever. Plus, they've added a catered dinner from one of my favorite restaurants, Sullivan's. It's Tuesday, May 12th at Plum Creek Golf Club in Carmel. Registration starts at 10, Mass at 11, then lunch and a shotgun start shortly after noon. You can sign up online at www.catholicradioindy.org or call 317-870-8400.
You're listening to Faith in Action on Catholic Radio, and I'm Jim Ganley, your host and co-host MJ Crowder. And MJ, we have had such a variety of guests lately.
Well, you know, something that we kind of switched up starting in December, and I do kind of like it, and that is some of our Faith in Action programs are designed to be a full half an hour long, and sometimes we do two shorter programs and that are completely unrelated, and that has kind of proven to be very interesting. And our guest today actually has been a guest before, Thomas Lamb. He is the author of most recently the book Do Not Worry, Do Not Be Anxious, Do Not Be Afraid. Welcome, Thomas Lamb.
Thank you.
You know, I was remembering, I think the last time you were on Faith in Action, we were in the pyramids a few years ago, and we talked at that time about a relaxation, I think, book and tape, maybe. Is that correct?
A relaxation CD.
CD, yeah. Yeah, and that was, I think, more about how to, I think it was how to set your sleep patterns better, how to relax so you could go to sleep. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so today, before we get into talking about this book, which I thought was quite interesting, actually, tell us a little bit about your background, because I'm looking at your card here, and former professor of psychiatry and relaxdeeply.org. So tell us a little bit about your background and what you've done for the last few years.
Well, I started out, we were living at the time in southern Indiana, and I chose to go to St. Meinrad Seminary and attended high school at St. Meinrad. After that, I joined a contemplative monastery for 5 years. So I spent 9 years in preparation for the priesthood. After that, I entered into graduate clinical training at the IU Medical Center in the Department of Psychiatry, and was appointed assistant professor in psychiatry. Then, following that, I went into private practice with a psychiatrist. I spent about 40 years in private practice with a psychiatrist.
Okay.
So I have a lot of experience treating anxiety. Anxiety is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And we all have the capacity to suffer anxiety. Anytime we look into the future, things we cannot control, we can generate anxiety. And people get very skillful at generating anxiety.
What are some of the big triggers for anxiety in people's lives? What main sources?
When we look at the future, there are so many things we cannot control. Our health, the economy, the politics. I like to say any day ISIS may kick in the door and start chopping off heads.
Sure.
And see, anything in the future that we worry about generates anxiety. And the more we worry, the more we get tangled up in that negative thinking, and it becomes a terrible experience.
And we're not well equipped to handle it. You know, as humans, we're just not well equipped to handle it. I mean, we take on stress and anxiety in some severe forms, and it affects us physically. You know, as you were talking, Mr. Lamb, I was thinking that actually with the advent, correct me if I'm wrong, this just popped into my head, that with the advent of, you know, the last 40, 50 years of going to a psychologist or a psychiatrist for help has become less stigmatized, if you will. But I think, I wonder if going to a psychiatrist to talk about your problems is in direct correlation to the decrease in going to a confessor to talk about your sins. Have you ever thought about that?
Well, I think there is a correlation there. In the 1960s, 10,000 priests left the priesthood. And in the same decade, 10,000 psychotherapists appeared.
Wow. Okay, there you have it.
Anxiety causes exquisite pain. It is a high-energy state, and that energy is blocked in the body, and it causes distress and pain, psychic pain and physical pain. It causes sleep disturbance. If you're not sleeping well, you're not going to function well.
Well, you've written a book that I think is quite interesting.
I love the title.
I love the title.
When you see the title, you think, I got to read this.
Right. Well, in bold print, it's Worry, Anxious, Afraid. That's what's in bold print. But the smaller print, it says, Do Not Worry, Do Not Be Anxious, Do Not Be Afraid. And I have to read the foreword, just a couple sentences, and because I love this, because I personally think that fear is a tool of the devil. And I do know from being told this many times that do not be afraid is the most oft repeated phrase in the Bible. More than love, more than the word love, do not be afraid is the most oft repeated phrase. But so in the preface of this book, you have a couple sentences here. Have no fear. Fear is evil, and perfect love casts out fear. There is no room for fear in the heart in which I dwell. Fear destroys hope. It cannot exist where love is or where faith is. Wow. That's beautiful. That's perfect. We ought to copy that and put it on our bedroom, bathroom, mirrors, entryways, everywhere. Because fear cannot exist where love or faith is. That's perfect, Thomas. Okay, so tell us about this book. Because the book, as I leaf through it, and God bless you for giving us a copy of this book, it looks to be all of the passages in the Bible that contain something to do with don't be anxious, don't be afraid.
Everything in the Bible pertaining to worry, fear, and anxiety is included in this book, every passage. Now, sometimes people come up to me and they say, you know, there are 365 passages in the Bible where God says, do not worry, do not be afraid. I say, nonsense. There are 210 passages, because I've read every one of them. I can guarantee you they're not 365.
So that's why it's not a perpetual, see? Yeah. I see. Yeah. Okay.
Now, some books are kind of meant to be a quick read, you know, like you sit down and you start with page one, and boy, just it's a page turner. You read till you get to the end, and you know, in a day or however long it takes you to read a book, you're all done with it. This doesn't appear to be that kind of book.
Some people have said to me, I have one passage per page, and some people have said to me, I love to get up in the morning and just read that one passage. One day after Mass, a man came up to me excitedly and said, I tried to read one passage a day. I just couldn't do it. I had to read 10 pages.
Oh.
I took that as a compliment.
Yeah, I do love it. I think for me, at least, and maybe I'm kind of, what do I want to say, like most of our listeners, in that I like to read just a passage, because if you flip the pages, most of these are a paragraph, some are two or three paragraphs, but there's not much, you don't have to devote much time, maybe a couple minutes, and if I want more, I close the book and meditate on it.
Oh,
but
wow.
Each one of these is a nugget, Mr. Lamb, each one is a nugget, and each one of them is a quotation from the Bible. So you kind of get your Bible study, if you will, all in one. But tell us why, and if you're just now tuning in, listeners, our guest today, Thomas Lamb, he's an author many times over. Today we're talking about Do Not Worry, Do Not Be Anxious, and Do Not Be Afraid, a book that you wrote. Tell us a little bit about your reasoning behind writing this book, because you, a lifelong psychiatrist, you've been in psychiatry your whole life, and it seems to me that, in fact, the name of your group, Self Care LLC, it has to do with taking care of yourself. And I know we only have a couple minutes left. Okay, I know we've got 2 minutes left. But in the 2 minutes that we have
when
left.
When I was 37 years old, I had a strange experience. I imagined that I had died. I went before the throne of God. God leaned forward and he said to me, "Did you read my book?" I said, "Holy smokes, I've got 3 degrees. I've read all these books, but I didn't read his book." So I started to read the Bible very faithfully. And one of the themes that jumped out at me over and over and over was, "Do not fear, do not be afraid, do not be anxious." And I said, "I have to publish that." Well, that was 20 years ago. At that time, I couldn't get it published. And I had the book in a drawer. And just recently, I thought, that book is valuable. I want to get it published. I got it out, polished it up, got it published. And I think the book meets a universal need. It teaches people that it's the subtitle of the book is a self-help manual for people who worry a lot and suffer anxiety and fear.
Which is all of us. Which is all of us,
now,
really.
Now, where is the book available? Where can people get it?
The book is available at Krieg's downtown. It's available at Celtic Cross on 86th Street. It's available on Amazon. It's available on my own website, relaxdeeply.org.
Our guest today on Faith in Action, Thomas Lamb, author, "Do Not Worry, Do Not Be Anxious, Do Not Be Afraid." God bless you, and thank you so much for, I think that this book is very topical. I think it is what we need. There are so many things beyond our control, when in fact, truly, what do we really control in this world, really? Not much.
We can control our own thoughts, and the reality is that what we think becomes real for us, becomes our reality. So we have to learn to think positive thoughts, and we have to learn to expel negative thoughts. And then we can lead a calm, joyful, blessed life and enjoy being alive.
God bless you. Couldn't have said it better. Thank you so much for being our guest today, and may the Lord's peace be with you.
May the Lord's peace be with you.
You've been listening to Faith in Action. Underwritten by St. Vincent Health, providing the spirit of caring through 20 health ministries that serve 46 central Indiana counties, and by Marian University, offering Catholic and academic excellence in the Franciscan and liberal arts traditions. To suggest a guest or a topic for this program, call us at 317-870-8400.
May the Lord's peace be with you. May the Lord's peace be with you.